It's showtime.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy.
Screaming. Screaming.
Here we go, off and running on this 19th day of April, 2023. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb, too. That, of course, is where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All time zones in between and the great globe round. And where if you pop in the chat room just right about now, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers to the program and to the chat room. And let me refresh here. Namely, Squeaky. Hey, Squeaky. Right now in the chat room, it's just Squeaky and me. I'm sure more will be along presently. Anyway, come by. You'll enjoy it. A merry time is had by all. Except, like, you know, when I open a can of sparkling seltzer and, limoncello in particular, and Grace manages to dump it all over herself only seconds before airtime. It might be one of those evenings. Hi, I'm Robin. And, there's Theo. Hey, Theo. Theo's in the chat room, too. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different in that respect. And so we say thank you to our 19th day of the month PayPal subscribers. Thank you to Darlene in Connecticut. Thank you, Sharon. Thank you to Clayton. And thank you to, and Robert was last night. Thank you. So Clayton, Sharon, and Darlene are our 19th of the month PayPal partial sponsors of the program. Thank you so very much. Where fundraising stands right now? $1,780. We are in a hole, and it is an unpleasant hole because when the hole gets like this, we get to the place where, bills don't get paid, things don't happen, things get turned off, and we don't have a show. So any help would be great help knocking that down. It creeps me out. It scares me. I don't know why I have to put euphemisms on it. It scares me. This is the downside to being an independent progressive broadcaster. And
worries the heck out of me. But, well, we still got plenty to do in terms of the program for this afternoon, this evening, whatever time it is, wherever you might be. Oh, and if you're listening to the podcast, please, on whatever platform you're listening, like and subscribe and leave a comment. Really does help, because we're getting a few new folks coming into the discussion here and there, and I really love that. Ralph's, you ain't just whistling Dixie. Nobody needs to be whistling Dixie, by the way. Lassie, get the sheriff. Robin's down the well.
Hello? Lassie, leave the dachshund alone. Lassie, go get the sheriff.
Oh, and by the way, Ralph says, oh my God, I'm watching the trial, the witch trials of J.K. Rowling right now. The new video out from Natalie Wynn on her channel, ContraPoints, on YouTube. It is, that woman does amazing work. And it's worth a couple of hours if you want to take the time for it. It really is a brilliant overview of the history of homophobia and transphobia in the 20th and into the 21st century. Absolutely brilliant. Nominally, it's prayer meeting Wednesday, but I think spring is in the air, and the little old blue-haired ladies and the little old blue-haired men and the little old blue-haired non-binaries in the Fellowship Hall kitchen at the Cathedral of Common Sense, well, they just bugged out today. I noticed there were a couple of bottles of communion wine gone, and it looked like they'd cleaned out the leftovers, so I don't know, maybe they're somewhere out on the gorge having a picnic, and if they are, well, I'm jelly. But I'm here, you're here, and we're going to be busy. The Supreme Court of the United States, you know, that's rife with corruption. Hi, Clarence. They extended the stay on Judge Kaczmarek, you know, the maggot from Texas. They extended the stay on his ruling that tried to impose his weird, sick religious beliefs on people who can become pregnant in this country by trying to deny them access to mifepristone. So, Sammy Bad Breath Alito extended the stay so the court can dig a little harder. And I have a hard time celebrating this. I mean, it's better than letting it go into effect, but with this bunch, you know, when you consider Sammy Bad Breath and Fappy and Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch and the handmaid and Brat Kavanaugh, I feel like they're probably just digging around trying to come up with the right wording to judicially screw the rights of the American people, you know, again. So there's that. There have been arrests. These are just follow-ups to some stories. There have been arrests made down in Dadeville, Alabama. A pair of teenagers and a pair of adults were arrested for shooting into a crowded Sweet 16 birthday party. Jesus. The ease with which they got access to firearms is, of course, not being discussed, because that's not that they don't do that down in Alabama. The party was being held at a dance studio in Dadeville, And 10:34 p.m., shots rang out. Four people were murdered. Sean Kivia Smith, 17 years old. Marsha Collins, 19. Corbin Holston, 23. And Philstavius Dowdell, 18. Four people more are still in the hospital. And, good God, 32 were injured in the attack. The district attorney for the 5th Judicial Circuit in Alabama, a guy named Mike Segrist, struggled with his emotions when he was making his announcement. The birthday girl's brother was one of those who was slaughtered because freedom. Mike Segrist said, "There's an uncut cake and an unburnt 16 candles that never got lit. Lex's brother was one of the victims. On her 16th birthday party, she knelt by her brother as he took his last breath. That's what we're dealing with. These are my kids. These are our kids. Don't mess with our kids. Do not mess with our kids." I should probably just let that quote go by. And why did the shooting start? Well, the DJ at the party, a guy named Keenan Cooper, said it was because somebody with a gun was told they couldn't come into the party. Well, see, it's those people that are trying to ban guns. They're making the people with the guns all mad, and they're having to shoot children over it. And at one point in time, the statement was made that we will charge them with crimes. If you shoot somebody in Alabama, we're going to try you. And there will, of course, be nothing in the long run done other than to probably, it being Alabama, they'll probably try the defendants, they'll find them guilty, and they will sentence them to be murdered in the name of the state of Alabama. It's just sickening. Then there's Texas, where we have a new shooting. This is exhausting. Does it just weigh on your soul too? Because what gets under my skin is that, as is the case with hunger, as is the case with homelessness, these are not problems that are endemic to every society. These are choices. We choose to be a country that has birthday parties shot up, or cheerleaders coming home from practice shot because they went to the wrong car. Because that's what happened in Texas, not far from Austin. Some high school girls would carpool to one of these cheerleading companies. They were Well, it's you can't really say professional, but they're highly organized cheerleading, and well, they take their cheerleading awfully doggone seriously in Texas. And so they would all meet in an HEB grocery store parking lot, and then they would drive to the cheerleading center. And then when practice was over, they would go back to the HEB parking lot, get in their respective vehicles, and go home. Only that didn't happen. They got through the entire go back to the HEB parking lot part, but one of the... Good God... One of the girls thought she was getting in a friend's car and instead got in the wrong car and saw a man that she didn't recognize sitting in the passenger seat, knew she had made a mistake. And immediately got back out of the car, but not fast enough. Oh, no. Because dude pulled a gun and started shooting. Two of the girls were shot. One of them remains critically injured. It happened in Elgin, Texas. It happened about 12:15 this morning, 15 after midnight. The shooter is identified as Pedro Tello Rodriguez Jr. He's 25 years old. And in Texas, you can try to murder a couple of teenage cheerleaders and you get charged with a count of deadly conduct, which in Texas is only a third-degree felony. The cops called it an altercation in the parking lot of HEB in which multiple shots were fired into a vehicle. One of the victims is identified as Peyton Washington. She's an 18-year-old high school senior. She cheers at Round Rock Independent School District near Austin. And she's the one who's in critical condition. She's described as stable in the ICU and will have what is being described as a long road to recovery. The other cheerleader who was shot is Heather Roth, and she was grazed and on one of her legs and was treated and released at the scene. And this just makes me sick. Heather Roth said he pulled out a gun and then he just started shooting at all of us. Peyton opens the door and she starts throwing up blood. Two other cheerleaders managed to not be injured, not get shot by an outburst of Second Amendment freedom. But again, shot up student athletes are a price that Republicans in this country are willing to pay so that pasty-faced, doughy old white men can sit around in their houses with and fondle their freedom protectors until it's time until they decide to blow away a 20-year-old girl or a 16-year-old boy or whomever it happens to be. And remember, it was Charlie Kirk, was it not, the man with the hugest head in the world, who said, hey, a few kids shot's a pretty good bargain in exchange for freedom. Oblivious to the fact that they're free in Australia. Yeah, they're very free. And free in Canada. Free in Japan. Free all over Western Europe. And they don't have their cheerleaders getting shot up or 20-year-old kids trying to find their way home lost in a neighborhood and getting murdered or a 16-year-old boy getting a bullet in the head. And it just, well, Heather Roth said she initially panicked at thinking that a stranger was in her friend's car before realizing she had the wrong vehicle. Then when she started to apologize, the man threw up his hands, pulled out a gun, and began to shoot. Because that's what you do in America. Shoot, literally, shoot first and ask questions later. I live in rural West Virginia. As I mentioned on yesterday's program, we've had people come to the door wanting to know, did so-and-so live here? No, I'm sorry. I think you've got the wrong address. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Have a good night. Okay. Bye. And nobody gets shot. Does that mean I'm living in another era? I don't know. I just know it makes me incredibly angry and sad. Randy Radar says Wall Street gave the poor rednecks guns instead of wages. Is that it? Is this an economic anxiety argument? Are all these old white guys so upset by the fact that Joe Biden's in the White House that they can't help themselves and they're scared to death of the marauding hordes? Remember the lawyer couple in St. Louis from a couple of years back? Yeah. On and on and on. Meanwhile, in Missouri, it just keeps getting worse and weirder. There's a county official in Missouri, Ike Skelton. Is the official in question. He's the presiding commissioner for Camden County, Missouri. And in March, he and five other county officials decided to write a letter to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. They said, we will not assist your unconstitutional agency in violating the rights of our citizens' God-given constitutionally protected right to keep and bear arms. Yeah, he's having a fit. Because also a few years back, the ATF raided his brother Jim Skelton's gun store, and the ATF seized over 300 guns. That's when he did a radio interview in November of 2021, said,
I want folks to know there's a time in this country that we're going to have to stand up and just say no, that we're not going to deal with these things anymore.
Can somebody send a Black Hawk helicopter over to Ike Skelton just to so he can understand that? Well, never mind.
Because Missouri has a Second Amendment Preservation Act.
And that Second Amendment Preservation Act imposes state penalties on any official who actually enforces federal gun laws. Last month, a federal judge said that the
Second Amendment Preservation Act
is unconstitutional. And so the Attorney General of Missouri, Andrew Bailey, who is presently engaged in a crusade against trans people in Missouri, sorry, it comes up. He's appealing that decision. And the reason the ATF raided Jim Skelton's gun store said that the ATF told him during the raid that he had hundreds of infractions. And Jim Skelton said, well, how am I supposed to know that? I can't just take their packet, slap it to my forehead, and absorb it. And so he was indicted on 15 counts. Among other things, that he sold weapons to undercover ATF agents and helped people do straw man purchases or let somebody buy a gun on behalf of somebody else and didn't record the information, didn't run a background check. And he got off light. He signed a pretrial diversion agreement and wouldn't even face a conviction if he was able to abide by the terms and conditions of his diversion agreement for 18 long months. Problem was, the prohibition included him not possessing any firearms. And his pettifogger, some dude named Kevin Jameson, said it was all just a misunderstanding and Jim Skelton got bad information. His brother Ike says,
No, the federal judge, in my opinion, has incorrectly found our Second Amendment Preservation Act to be unconstitutional. However, it is on appeal, and while it's on appeal, it is still full force and effect in the state of Missouri. It is our position to not comply and to not assist the federal government in enforcing what we believe are unconstitutional laws. We're not restricting them from enforcing their unconstitutional law. They have every welcome to come down to Camden County to drive to those businesses and ask them for their business license.
And I just kept unburdening himself of his sincerely held beliefs about guns.
I support our Second Amendment very much. Only thing my brother's raid did was confirm everything I thought about the ATF. It's just who I am. I had nothing to do with what they did or do not do to my brother. It's not retribution. They're just not used to people standing up to them, the federal government in general. Hoo-wee, fit this feller out in a Confederate uniform and give him a flag and... No, let's don't.
But that's so 2023. And then, well, it is prayer meeting Wednesday. And even if the Cathedral Fellowship Hall kitchen staff done took off, we've got it. Yeah, we got a story. The conservative Christians are barking and grunting because the Supreme Court heard a case yesterday that one fears, at least it's not a gun case, that one fears will result in another diminution of civil society in this country in favor of people who, people who are in the end of the extreme right-wing version of bullshit Christianity. The case they heard yesterday was Groff versus DeJoy. Yes, that DeJoy. Because a mail carrier, Gerald Groff, is suing the United States Postal Service because they want him to work on Sunday. All of this stems from an agreement that the United States Postal Service signed. And, you know, we have postal workers in the Horn Family Community Congregation. The U.S. Postal Service signed an agreement with Amazon back in 2013 in which they agreed to deliver Amazon packages, including on Sundays. And so Gerald Groff is some sort of an independent contractor carrier, I believe. And they said, hey, need you to work on Sunday. And he said, I can't do that. Jesus tells me that Sunday is my day of rest. Even though, there's that whole Sunday is not actually the Sabbath thing. Speak to your friendly neighborhood practitioner of Judaism to find out more. Or, you know, Seventh-day Adventurer. That would be Saturday, Friday into Saturday. And so a pissed-off postal worker will likely go into the annals of the Supreme Court alongside a football coach who wanted to make his players pray. That was Washington. Or the Christian families who wanted free government money to send their kids to Jesus school. Or a baker in Colorado who sincerely held religious beliefs compelled him not to make no gay wedding cakes. And so Gerald Groff quit his job. Because he couldn't work on Sundays. Because Jesus would be mad at him and maybe never, ever, ever forgive him. The weird and twisted thing here is that other religious minorities, Jews, Hindus, Muslims, Sikhs, Seventh-day Adventists, they filed friend of the court briefs alongside Groff, telling the court that they want the court to reverse a 50-year-old, that's called precedent, y'all, 50-year-old ruling that in itself overturned a so-called civil rights statute that protected religious accommodation. What they're after is Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. and it calls for reasonable accommodation of religious practices of workers, unless it would cause an undue hardship. And so we're going to see yet another piece of constitutional precedent chucked into the dirt over some butthurt religious person's tender fee-fees. And it seems almost a lead pipe cinch that the court will give Mr. Groff his job that he quit back, and then he can get a payday from the Postal Service. Oh, my country. But like I said, arguments were yesterday. Representing the government side of the case, Solicitor General of the United States, Elizabeth Preligar, said that overturning the ruling in question, it's a 46-year-old ruling, it would be an overreaction. Lawyer Preligar said, it is just incorrect to say there's not a substantial amount of accommodation happening. And then Brat, who really likes beer and baseball and little passed out high school girls and having his mortgage paid off by a dark money super PAC and his credit card bills, said to the lawyers, I'm not sure we can give you a full manual of how it's going to play out. And Solicitor Preligar said, you know, this was not some minor inconvenience to the Postal Service. Sammy Bad Breath got challenged, or challenged rather, Ms. Preligar.
We have amicus briefs by many representatives of many minority religions, Hindus, Muslims, Orthodox, Jews, Seventh-day Adventists. They all say the 1977 ruling has violated their right to religious liberty. Are they wrong?
I wish these assholes weren't so predictable. Somewhere along the way, we probably need a little bit of a giggle. This looks like one. A few days ago, Florida Governor Ron Monkey Up DeSantis. You know, I find it funny that Nitwit Nero has named him Ron DeSanctimonious. Because DeSantis is just so easy. Seeing as how he got elected the first time on, you know, with the help of and votes of real live, no kidding, Nazis and Klansmen. But, you know, you probably can't use that if you're the son of a Klansman like Nitwit Nero is.
Soak.
But in his ongoing stupid feud with Disney He said he wants to develop some land in Florida right next to the land that Disney controls, and that maybe Florida needed to build a new prison there. And all this stems from their feud over Monkey Up DeKlantis and his disgusting Don't Say Gay bill. Which, by the way, as per prediction, has been expanded. Don't Say Gay now includes fourth grade to the very last day of senior year of high school, and forbids a teacher from intentionally teaching about gender or sexuality. Didn't even require any state legislative action. And of course, that's intended. The thing you got to understand about that is intentional teaching about gender or sexuality that isn't straight and cis. Because as one gay Republican lawmaker in another state pointed out last week in questioning his Republican colleague about a bill that she had introduced, another Don't Say Gay bill, he said, ma'am, who was Martha Washington? And she said, George Washington's wife. And he said, how are you going to be able to say that in a classroom? Well, I don't think that has anything to do with gender or sexuality. And he said, yeah, it does. Wife denotes gender. Wife denotes sexuality. And then countersunk the nail and said, what you're saying here is you want to make sure that school teachers don't mention anything but cisgender and heterosexuality, because you can do that all day long and twice on Sunday. Well, now, Bob Iger, who runs the House of the Mouse, has announced Disneyland After Dark Pride Night. And that'll be coming to Disneyland in Anaheim during Pride Month. In a blog post, Disney said that they'll celebrate the LGBTQ communities and allies between June 13th and June 15th. And, well, Monkey Up said that Disney crossed a line when they called for the repeal of the law. Yeah. No, they didn't cross a line. They've got corporate free speech. And this is kind of, well, over at CNN. Do you know who Vivek Ramaswamy is? This guy is one of the few other declared Republican candidates for president. Vivek Ramaswamy, Asa Hutchinson out of Arkansas. It was interesting. I was reading an article about Asa Hutchinson's presidential ambitions and his campaign. And he's running around out there openly calling out Donald Trump. But somehow or other, and maybe it's because the journalist in question is young or thinks that history began with them or something. I don't know how you mention Asa Hutchinson You know, former governor of Arkansas, yeah, okay. But Asa Hutchinson came to national prominence in the late 90s as one of the most determined pursuers of the cleanness. Oh, he was terribly, terribly worried, terribly concerned, deeply disturbed about the sex life of the President of the United States. Somehow that didn't get mentioned. But Don Lemon went after Vivek Ramaswamy. And Poppy Harlow was right there, too. She, in particular, queried Vivek Ramaswamy about the speech that he went and gave to the National Rifle Association in Taliban-Indianapolis. In that speech, he, Vivek Ramaswamy, said that Democrats want to put black people, quote, back in chains, unquote. That's when Don Lemon went off. One might go so far as to say, got a little hot under the collar. Yeah, we'll get there in a second. Because it kind of sounded like Vivek Ramaswamy was blaxplaining.
Morning. Your campaign slogan is a new American dream, and I was reading through your platform last night. I wonder what you would do specifically to actually bring us together, not just Republicans and Democrats. What does unity look like to you, Vivek, for rich and poor, for rural and urban, for Republicans and Democrats?
That is the right question to be asking. And I think the main divide in this country, and I say this to conservative audiences equally, is not between Republicans and Democrats. It is between those of us who are pro-American, embracing the ideals that set this country into motion, and I think an increasing strain in this country that is anti-American, that wishes to apologize for a nation founded on those ideals. But that's not a 50-50 split. I think most people are in the pro-American camp. And Poppy, I think one of the ways they would say we get to national unity, some people think, is by showing up in the middle and compromising. I respect that view, but I reject it.
You reject compromise.
I reject compromising on our principles. I think that the right way to get to national unity, and I mean this, to unite this country, is by embracing actually the radicalism of the American ideals themselves. We celebrate our diversity and differences. I'm glad we have some three different shades of melanin on this set right now, two different genders. That's fine. But what I say is, so what? That diversity,
as long as there's only two,
unless there's something greater that binds us together, that unites us across that diversity. And I'm running for president to revive those ideals that bind us together across our diverse attributes.
I want to get into a few issues, one of them being China. Before I get to China, I just want to better understand something you said this week, speaking before the audience at the NRA. Here's what you said, referring to back to 1865. Here it was.
I want you to raise your hand if you know when the first anti-gun laws were passed in this country. Raise your hand if you do. 1865. You want to know when it happened? We fought a civil war in this country to give black Americans the equal protection under the law that we failed to secure them in 1776. But then you want to know what happened? Southern states passed anti-gun laws that stopped black people from owning guns. The Democrat Party, then as in now, wanted to put them back in chains.
Democrat Party, you shitbird.
Then as in now, that's quite an accusation about the current Democratic Party. Who and what were you referring to?
I was referring to Joe Biden and his expression of wanting to put them back in chains, dating back to Lyndon Johnson. I think Lyndon Johnson's so-called great society was one of the greatest misnomers in American political history, where even back then in the 1960s, 70% plus of black kids were born into two-parent homes. Today, that number is less than 30% in the opposite direction. The very policy...
God, how have we missed out on this loon? I guess he wasn't running for office. He was just being a tech bro.
...policies that we implemented in this country in the name of helping black Americans have actually been disastrous for black Americans and all Americans. And I think that's something that we need to wake up to.
In 1865, you were talking about the black codes, right?
That's right.
Passed, enacted to make it a crime for a black person to carry a gun
exactly.
in the South. But you're equating that to the current president? You're referring to economic chains? What are you saying?
Well, I was referring to Joe Biden's, I think, ill-chosen expression to say they're the party that wants to put you back into chains. What I'm actually saying is that if you look at the policies of the modern Democratic Party...
You just said that about Democrats.
Absolutely. So what I'm saying is that...
Yeah, but it's okay if he does it because he's Vivek Ramaswamy.
Actually, it's policies like that of Lyndon Johnson and Joe Biden that are actually holding black
Lyndon
Americans
Johnson's
back.
Lyndon Johnson's the war on poverty?
Yes, and in particular, his great society where... He actually created incentives in the family where if you're a family, you could actually get more money by not having the father in the home.
What?
Oh, for God's sakes. This sounds like this sounds like Rush Limbaugh the early years.
That's what you get. You get what you pay for. And I think it's been really bad for the black community. I think it's really bad for all Americans.
What? Do you have anything on this before I move on to China?
I don't see what one has to do with the other, but... Go on. I took up a lot of time with Fox.
Oh, it's fine. We have time.
I don't really see what one has to do with the other, especially consider and using the Civil War to talk about black Americans. That war was not fought for black people to have guns. That's not.
That war was fought for black people to have freedoms in this country.
Yeah.
Actually, that's why the Civil War was fought.
Okay.
And the sad part about it.
That wasn't fought for black people to have guns. I think.
Actually, you don't know, funny fact is black people did not get to enjoy the other freedoms until their Second Amendment rights were secured. And I think that that's one of the lessons that we learned.
Black people still aren't allowed to enjoy the freedoms.
I disagree with you on that, Don. I disagree with you. I think you're doing a disservice to our country by failing to recognize the fact that we have equality before the law.
When you are in black skin and you live in this country, then you can disagree with me. But we're not. You mentioned in here that
we have
three different shades of
melanin. Don, I think we have to be able to talk about these issues in the open regardless of the color of our skin. Black Americans today, to say that, compare that to 1865 and 1964.
Who? This guy's gross.
You to compare it to 1865 and 1964 is actually, I think it's insulting to black people. It's insulting to me as an African American. I don't want to sit here and argue with you because it's infuriating for you to put those things together. It's not right. Your telling of history is wrong.
What part of the history was wrong?
What part of the history was wrong? That the Civil War was fought. You're making people think that the Civil War was fought for black people, only for black people to get guns and for black people to
the
have
the Civil War was fought for black people in this country to get freedoms, a noble mission. And I think that even after we succeeded, we had to actually secure those freedoms.
To reduce it in a speech at the NRA to say you're making people think, or you're trying to say that black people to get guns, that was the reason that you're there at the NRA. That was the reason for the Civil War.
I think that's reductive. It's not
and
reductive,
I think it's insulting.
Don.
There are a whole plethora of reasons that for
look,
the Civil
with
War.
With due respect, I find your explanation reductive and actually insulting, including to black Americans, to say that black people today, compared to 1964, 1865, haven't made progress in part because of the freedoms we secured. And the Second Amendment was
black
part
people,
of what secured
hang on,
that
please.
Freedom.
I cannot keep a thought if you guys are talking to me in my ear. So hang on one second. So to say that black people, say what you said again.
Black people secured their freedoms after the Civil War. It is a historical fact, Don. Just study it. Only after their Second Amendment rights were secured.
They were not secured their freedoms after the Civil War. That is not, you are discounting.
You know, miss me with all of this. But I'm having a hard time remembering that time when Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. marched from Selma to Montgomery with a hog leg strapped to his hip. I'm having a hard time remembering that period in American history where roving bands of black folks went around burning crosses in white people's yards and, well, lynching them. and I'm having a hard time remembering lynch mobs being chased away by gun-toting, Second Amendment-loving groups of black people. This dude lives in an alternate reality. And Don Lemon's not my favorite talking head on the TV. But it's hard not to be in complete agreement with him. And Vivek Ramaswamy is never going to have to worry about cops busting through his door and gunning down his family. There's not going to be a Breonna Taylor sort of case in Vivek Ramaswamy's multi-gazillionaire world. And guns are no help when the guns are already drawn. This is the fundamental disconnect of it takes a good guy with a gun to stop a bad guy with the gun. Because all the people with the guns now think they're the good guys with the guns. You know, right before they shoot the cheerleaders.
Reconstruction, you're discounting a whole host of things that happened after the Civil War when it comes to African Americans, including the whole reason that the Civil Rights Movement happened is because black people did not secure their freedoms after the Civil War, and that things turned around. People tried to change the freedoms that were supposed
and
to happen.
And you know how they got
the
it? They got their Second Amendment rights, and they actually got the NRA played a big role in that. But today, Don,
the NRA did not play a big role in that.
Absolutely, they trained black Americans how to use firearms. That's just a lie. You can tell Don Lemon's a little bit flummoxed at this point. The NRA give Dr. King his very first 30-06 and his very first 1911 semi-automatic 45 caliber pistol, which he then used to blow away Bull Connor. Oh, this isn't reductive history. These are Trumpian alternative facts. Who was the rich dude? Yeah, okay. It just dawned on me. I know who Vivek Ramaswamy is. He's the 2024 version of Andrew Yang. Filthy fucking rich and absolutely clueless about the lives that are led by ordinary Americans. Jesus!
That's a lie. The NRA did not play a big role.
This is just historical fact.
The part that I find insulting
is when you say today black Americans don't have those rights after we have gone through civil rights revolution in this country.
You are sitting here telling an African American about the rights and what you find insulting about the way I live, the skin I live in every day.
Here's where you and I have
a different
point of view.
Black and white that black people don't have in this country and that black people do have.
Well, here's where you and I have a different point of view. I think we should be able to express our views regardless of the color of our skin. We should have this debate without me regarding
views,
you as a black man.
Insulting that you're
Express your view, Vivek. And don't be put out when somebody explains to you that your views are the views of an idiot. This guy is, as we would say here in the hills, dumber in the head than a hog is in the ass. Yeah, he's a technocrat and has no idea how government should or ought to work. Just the fact that it's worked pretty well for him because he's stinking rich.
regarding you as a fellow citizen.
You're
that's
sitting
what I think
here,
we should
whatever ethnicity you are, explaining to me
whatever ethnicity
about
I am,
what it's like to be black.
Whatever
in America.
Ethnicity
I'm
I am, I'll tell you what I am. I'm an Indian American. I'm proud of it. But I think we should have this debate, black, white, doesn't matter.
I think we should have this
on
debate
on the content
should,
of the ideas.
If you're going to do it, you should do it in an honest way and in a fair way. And what you're doing is not an honest and fair way. Okay? We appreciate you coming on.
With
thank
due
you.
Respect.
No.
Respect, Don. I look forward to continuing that conversation. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, that ain't going to happen.
We'll talk about China.
Yes, let's talk about China.
No, let's don't and say we didn't. Did you notice when they were playing the clip of him talking to the pasty-faced old white dudes of the NRA? Did you notice when he said, anybody here know when black people got their rights? Raise your hand. Did you notice the breathtaking silence at the NRA convention?
Wait a minute. Hey, Marvelline, what the fuck? I thought we was going to the NRA convention, not the NAACP convention. What are we talking about black people for? This is the NRA. USA. God almighty.
Wait a minute. Nobody told me the NRA had done gone all woke. Cowbell, first of the evening. Goes to Matt in San Francisco. What's next? Asks Matt. Are you going to tell me that Wayne LaPeter wasn't beaten on the Edmund Pettus Bridge on Bloody Sunday? Yeah, he was right. Exactly. Just ask Vivek Ramaswamy. He'll tell you that Wayne the Peter and Charlton Heston were right there next to John Lewis. And that horrifying footage of Bull Connor with the dogs and the fire hoses and turning them on poor Ronald Reagan. See, that's what happens when we teach all that gender and sexuality ideology in school. We ain't got time to teach the real history of America. Charlton Heston standing there taking a bullet right next to Medgar Evers. Does this shit get under your skin like it does mine? Because sometimes this foolishness feels like, I don't know, fire ants. Rich Dude Audio, Jack in Shreveport, says, I would love for one of the lame-ass media host moderators, I think the woman I heard at the first of the clip, Poppy Harlow, to ask one of these liars what they mean by the principles upon which this country was founded or our founding ideals. What would that guy have said? He would have obfuscated and deflected and talked about the pursuit of happiness. And meanwhile, back to that little village near Hebron, New York, and Kalen Gillis, who was looking forward to having a long life and instead had it ended for her by a 65-year-old white dude named Kevin Monahan. A report says that he has been charged with second-degree murder. That's murder lacking premeditation. That's what's called heat of passion murder. Kalen Gillis wanted to be a veterinarian. She loved animals. He blew her away with a shotgun. And today, Kevin Monahan was denied bail. So he's got a little time to think about it on the county dime. Washington County, New York Sheriff Jeffrey Murphy said that when deputies showed up, that Kevin Monahan was not cooperative. He would not come out and talk to patrols. And went on to say, Sheriff Murphy did, that he, quite frankly, has not shown any remorse in this case. The people who love and grieve for and miss Kalen Gillis said that, in fact, she loved animals. And she was absolutely crazy about Disney stuff. Quote, she knew every movie, hero, and princess ever created. They'll be having a celebration of her life, which she will not be able to attend, of course, being dead and all, on Friday. Kevin Monahan has a pettifogger by the name of Kurt Mausert, interviewed by WTEN-TV. He said his client, dude, go back to school. Take a PR class or something. Because this is not endearing your client to the public. Lawyer Mausert said that his client, quote, get the bucket, was involved in a series of tragic mistakes made by more than one person that resulted in the death of a young lady. What the actual fuck? So it sounds like this pettifogging SOB is saying that some degree of blame attaches perhaps to the driver of the automobile who had the unmitigated temerity of turning around in Kevin Monahan's driveway, forcing Kevin Monahan to come out onto the porch with a shotgun and blow away Kalen Gillis. Tragic mistakes made by more than one person. Bullshit. No, really, bullshit. Kevin Monahan did not make a tragic mistake. This was not an oops, blam, pray situation, as I'm sure our pal Joy in Ann Arbor is thinking exactly at this moment when she's listening to the podcast. It was not one of those situations in which the gun just went off. The shotgun was loaded. And by the way, probably not with any 4 or 6 shot. This sounds like it's either a slug or double-aught buck to do the damage that he did. The harm that he did. I hope Lawyer Mausert tries to run that one past a jury. Because I'm hoping the prosecutor in Washington County, New York, is competent enough to make him eat those words. A series of tragic mistakes. Makes it sound like maybe she just accidentally swallowed some cyanide and then Kevin Monahan just happened to put the, you know, some lead through her. Bad lawyering. Bad lawyering. Yeah. Yeah, exactly, Gene. Charlton Heston quote. Flavio, reflecting on Kevin Monahan, said, "Bet I know how he votes and what channel he has on in his home." I bet it's still running after he goes to sleep at night. Don't you, Flavio? And, yeah, that's heartbreaking. Hey, Darlene. Darlene in Connecticut writing, Ralph Jarl is showing signs of almost full recovery, which is amazing, but almost is the operative word, and he is psychologically damaged, perhaps, possibly for life. He was, Ralph Jarl, remember, was an excellent student. He was a section leader in band. He had dreams of going to college and studying engineering. And his mama says that her son's able to communicate mostly when he feels like it, but mostly he just sits there and stares, and the buckets of tears just roll down his eyes. That from Associated Press report. Cleo Nogby is Ralph's mama. She said, "Ralph's doing considerably well. Physically, mornings are hard, but his spirits are in a good place. I borrow from his spirit." And then talked about the buckets of tears. "You can see that he's just replaying the situation over and over again, and that just doesn't stop my tears either." Meanwhile, the 85-year-old dude who blew him, tried to blow him away, shot him, Andrew Lester, aged 84, told police that he lives alone and he was scared to death because he saw a black male on his porch and thought someone was trying to break in. He claims no words were exchanged before the shooting, but after, as Ralph Jarl got up to run, he heard Andrew Lester holler, "Don't come round here!" That neighborhood. And Ralph Jarl had to go to three homes before he could find somebody who would render him aid. And the one person who rendered him aid insisted that he lie down on the ground like a criminal. President Biden called him and said, "Ralph, we'll see you in the Oval once you feel better." And there's a little bit of a blur because we've already heard from the prosecutor that there was a racial component to the shooting. But then the assistant prosecuting attorney stepped in, Alexander Higginbotham, and said in an email to the AP, "There is not a racial element to the legal charges that were filed." Meanwhile, the president of the Missouri NAACP, Nimrod Chappell Jr., said, "The police are not treating this case in the same way black people accused of murder are treated. A black suspect would have been in jail from jump." Still no word on whether the Department of Justice will get involved. then most of the legal minds who have been asked to opine on it say that very likely Andrew Lester will claim self-defense under Missouri's Stand Your Ground law. You know, the Trayvon Martin Arizona iced tea and Skittles defense. Because a young black man knocking on a door of the wrong house is immediately a threat to an 85-year-old white man who lives in a state of perpetual fear, having probably been put there by the same folks who agreed yesterday to pay $787.5 million for telling lies about Dominion voting systems. If that fact could be adequately developed, could that be a next step? Lying to viewers and creating them in them a sense of perpetual terror, such that they then go and blow away 16-year-old young scholars who have nothing armed about them. Is there any way under the sun that Fox News, if in fact Andrew was watching Fox News, Andrew Lester, is there any way to get some degree of accountability that way? And I imagine Ralph Yarrell is crying buckets of tears. A, it hurts. And B, he just learned a hard, hard lesson about the reality of life in the United States of America. I wonder what Vivek Ramaswamy thinks. Wonder if Vivek Ramaswamy thinks that Ralph Yarrell, since he was being sent out at night to go and pick up his little brothers, should have been packing heat when he came to the door. But it would have made for a more civil conversation. God, these Republicans are so fucking disgusting. Yeah, Ralph Yarrell might not have been shot if he'd have just been packing heat. I remember when Malloy would play that clip. I forget who it was singing it. Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun? It was done all bluegrass style, remember? I know some of you do. Oh, and speaking of lynching. Ugh. A man named Hyder Garcia is the head of elections for Tarrant County, Texas. That's where Fort Worth is. Yesterday, the New York Times reported that Hyder Garcia is quitting. He's had enough. It ain't worth it to be head of elections for Tarrant County, Texas. Because Hyder Garcia has been deluged with an absolute tsunami of death threats. The New York Times reporting says Mr. Garcia oversees elections in a county where in 2020 Donald J. Trump became only the second Republican presidential candidate to lose in more than 50 years. Right-wing skepticism of the election results fueled threats against him, even though the county received acclaim from state auditors for its handling of the 2020 voting. With Mr. Trump persistently repeating the lie that he won the 2020 election, many of his supporters and those in right-wing media have latched on to conspiracy theories and joined him in spreading disinformation about election security. Those tasked with running elections, even in deeply Republican areas that did vote for Mr. Trump in 2020, have borne the brunt of vitriol and threats from people persuaded by baseless claims of fraud. Mr. Garcia detailed a series of threats as part of his written testimony last year to the Senate Judiciary Committee, which he urged to pass better protections for election officials. He testified that he had repeatedly been the target of a doxing campaign, including the posting of his home address on Twitter after, there she is, Sidney Powell, a lawyer for Trump, falsely accused him on television and social media of manipulating election results. Trump won Texas! He lost in Tarrant County, but he won Texas! But that didn't matter. People don't matter. In the grand scheme of the Sidney Powells and the Rudy Giulianis and the John Eastmans and the Donald Trumps of the world. One asshole on Twitter urged people to hunt him down, Mr. Garcia. The phone would ring and someone would say, "Traitor." Another person said, "Hang him when convicted from fraud and let his lifeless body hang in public until maggots drip out of his mouth." That's the maggots, not the magats. The maggots even attacked the election office in Gillespie County, Texas, where Nitwit Nero won by 59%, or 59 points. And you know, the lawyer for Dominion was right. There are people who still have accountability to face, and hopefully one of them is Sidney Powell. And one wonders if Haider Garcia can partake of any of that justice. Because God knows he deserves it. Remember, Sidney Powell organized a raid in Georgia where maggots stole voting data. Good God. Meanwhile, they're having fun in the North Carolina legislature. The Daily Beast had a story today. A state senator in North Carolina by the name of Senator Michael Garrett has introduced Mickey's Freedom Restoration Act, urging Disney to decamp from Florida and move to North Carolina stand. the bill would appropriate $750,000 to try to court and lure Disney out of Florida. Senator Garrett, a member of the minority in the Senate, being a Democrat, said politicians who put their state's economy at risk to boost their own selfish political ambitions are a liability. He said he would welcome the Walt Disney Company and all other businesses seeking refuge from the culture war madness currently gripping the great, great state of Florida. And this, after Tenistan's experiment with, ham-fisted fascism and trying to remove and removing the Tennessee Two from their duly elected offices, I said that other maggot legislatures would soon try the tactic themselves. Guess what? Here we go. Montanistan. Oddly enough, and yay for whoever the voters are in the district that did this, one district in Montanistan elected a woman named Zoe Zephyr to represent them. And now the Montana Republican-controlled House is calling for censure of Zoe Zephyr because Zoe Zephyr had the unmitigated temerity to call out her colleagues in that body in regard to the spasm currently gripping that state and ever so many others, banning children from receiving gender-affirming care. And so they have a Senate Bill 99. There are amendments to it that would prohibit, well, the Fox News story, it's a lie, says sex change treatments for minors. No, there are no, we've been over that. But gender-affirming care, puberty blockers, things like that. And so during the debate, Zoe Zephyr stood up for the kids. And said, the only thing I will say is if you vote yes on this bill and yes on these amendments, I hope the next time there's an invocation, when you bow your heads in prayer, you see the blood on your hands. Oh, the hand-wringing and the pearl-clutching that went round and round in that Republican chamber. And House Majority Leader Sue Vinton. I know, wrong accent. She said, now, we can debate matters civilly and with respect for each other. Greg Gianforte, the guy who beat up a reporter for asking him a question, wrote a letter to the legislature and said, "This year you're pursuing commitment to protect Montana children from invasive medical treatments that can permanently alter their healthy developing bodies." You know, it'd be great if Republicans would stop thinking about the genitals of children. That would just be awesome. And so, 20 members of the Feed'em Carcass in Montana stand said, "The Montana Feed'em Carcass demands Representative Zoe Zephyr of Missoula's House District 100 be censured by the House for attempting to shame the Montana legislative body and by using inappropriate and uncalled for language during a floor debate over amendments concerning Senate Bill 99 to ban sex changes of minor children. This bill already passed the Montana House and Senate, and the debate was over amendments requested by the governor." And then, proving my point, "This kind of hateful rhetoric from an elected official is exactly why tragedies such as the Covenant Christian School shooting in Nashville occurred. Combined with former Montana Supreme Court Justice Jim Nelson's recent calls for jihad and a fight to the death, there is unmistakable evidence of a desire for some to engage in violence over political beliefs. This must stop." That's the Montana Feed'em Carcass. You know, the gun humpers. And Gianforte's suggested amendments passed the House 66-34. And he will now sign it into law. And then the state of Montana will spend a fortune defending the lawsuit that will be immediately filed. It's so exhausting. Because Zoe Zephyr is right. And the disgusting attempt to link Audrey Hale's gender identity to the fact that they shot up a school that had a history of sexual abuse of children. Well, it's immoral. It's unethical. It's disgusting. Which means it's naturally something that Republicans will happily and gladly do. But the most important part of this, is that little trans kids struggle to survive. And the adolescent years are in many ways the hardest part. The sense of internal conflict is awful. And the moral panic being peddled for nothing more than crass cash by these religion industry frauds wearing their Republican fascism on their sleeves makes it harder still. And I don't know how many trans kids there are in Montana, but every one of them has a place in my heart, and I hope yours too. And trans kids get to deserve to be able to become trans adults. And then just happy, functioning adults. And Zoe Zephyr was right. the likelihood that one or more of those kids in Montana, as a result of this godforsaken bill, will not get to do that is blood on the hands of those revolting maggot human piles of festering pus and flaming human waste. And what's more, she didn't even use any dirty words. Zoe Zephyr didn't. She appealed to their Christian sensibilities. The next time there's an invocation, when you bow your heads in prayer, I hope you see the blood on your hands. People like Zoe Zephyr are experts in her own life. And we know a little bit about the lives of others. Because we know a little bit about the struggle. But these hysterical, hypocritical Republicans can't get people's gender and sexuality off of their filthy minds. I wonder how many Republicans, I'd love to get a look at those Republicans' browser histories, because I guarantee you on those long, frozen Montana nights, there's some good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian Republicans banging away on their keyboards or something else, watching tranny porn. It's a hell of a thing to ask for heroism from, say, Pornhub or X-Hamster. But, hey, what do you say y'all check out some IP addresses in places like Montana and Talabama and Tennistan and Kentuckystan and West Virginia-stan? Tell us at least... give us a ballpark estimate of who and where and when people are watching that tranny porn. Because it appears to be terribly, terribly popular. Sorry. But I told you that this would spread. That this would metastasize like a cancer from Tennessee into other maggot state houses. And, well, here we are. You stay strong, Zoe Zephyr. Just a lot. And wow, we're past the halfway mark of the program. And I'm Phil Robstern for all I'm worth, I guess. And we are in a $1,780 fundraising hole that could spell absolute disaster for this little program. Remember, we don't sell anything here. Nothing is for sale. Everything is free. We give everything away. But we have to be able to keep the lights on and the internet on and the phones on. Eat food. In order to keep giving it away for free. So if you'd like to help out, this would be a great time so to do. And Ralph's follows Tiny Kittens and Scotia is one of the felines there, and she's had four kittens so far. So Ralph says, I'm going to kick in $25, and maybe some other folks will kick in too. So we're down to $17.55. We could raise $56 more. At least we wouldn't be across the $2,000 mark tomorrow. Please. Okay, let's run over to the stress line and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Robin.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Well, girl, I have had a hell of a week.
What's wrong?
Last Thursday, I lost my wallet.
Oh, no.
And debit card, which ties all of my PayPal stuff to all of you. And I've got a new bank card on the way, but they say it's going to take 7 to 10 business days. But on a better note, I talked to Christine this afternoon. They're readjusting her program so that she can come home on possibly on the 9th of May instead of the 20th. And that's great news. Now I have some, I'll go into some food porn of a sort. Since the kitchen staff, the fellowship hall, has decided to play hooky today.
They absolutely
and it's a
themselves,
beautiful
yes.
day to do it.
Oh, it is. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yes, well. So who blames them? I mean, how else do they figure out little blue-haired old ladies and little blue-haired old men survive these times if they don't cut loose a little bit every now and then? I believe that the goddess of irony deserves a cowbell, Robin. I don't know if she's ever gotten one on this program. But I do believe she deserves one.
There it is.
Because a 65-year-old murderer is being defended by a lawyer whose first part of his surname is Mauser.
Yes, I caught that myself. I wonder if his nickname's Broomhandle. Sorry, that's a little...
Only to his friends.
That's a little bit of late 19th, early 20th century gun humor.
Yes, I understand, but as I understand it, he's only known by that name to his friends, Robin. So, and we know what kind of. I think he's trying to set up an appeal for his client in counsel. My suggestion is that he falls asleep during the trial. Because he's saying way too much ahead of time.
Yeah.
I used to hang around a lot of defense attorneys, and the one piece of advice they would give me if I ever get in trouble, they'd say, shut the fuck up. You know. So. Maybe he should take that advice himself. But no, Christine and I are planning to go out with friends when she gets back to Culver's to celebrate my birthday. And I know you're a girl who's very familiar with that establishment, and I was needing some advice. What kind of sandwich would you recommend I get from them? Because I'm also going to get cheese curds and a banana split.
The banana split sounds heavenly. I understand
you. Oh, it's a lunch unto itself.
Yes.
I've had one. They're huge.
I mean, sandwich-wise, I've never had anything bad there.
You said something about a butter burger the last time.
Yeah, we
talked about Culver's. Yeah,
the butter burger is just their signature. And it is a fantastic hamburger. You know, to this day, it blows my mind that there's a Culver's. I mean, they have expanded. There's a Culver's on US 59 on the northbound side of the highway down a scant couple of miles from Gulf Shores, Alabama, the beach. And lo and behold, there's one in my hometown in Florence now. You know, it's
really,
yeah. In fact, Miss Terry and I met there for lunch when we went to our high school reunion. The first day we were in.
Exactly. I hope Miss Terry's doing well.
Oh, she is. We messaged earlier today, and she said it's absolutely beautiful down there today. The butter burger is the standard. Their fried fish sandwich is good.
Hmm. I'm looking forward to something I've never had, though, and that's their cheese curds.
You've never had the... Oh, well. Now,
I've never had cheese curds.
You get your choice of either ranch or marinara. Personally, I favor the marinara. But then again, I'm a little tomato junkie.
I see. Now, their marinara is not sweet, is it? I
mean, No.
It's got a little tang to it?
Yeah, it's tart. And
oh, good.
This is how bad I am, Dave. You know, over the weekend, I made the oxtail soup I was talking about. And
yes,
it was so good. So good. And I'm really hoping Kroger's is going to come through and get them in the meat case, because I've that recipe, for some reason or another, just speaks to everybody in this household. But that's not my point. The recipe I use calls for a little bit of tomato paste. And I have absolutely fallen head over heels in love with this Italian tomato paste. It's organic. Kroger's carries it in their Simple Truth Organic. But there's other, you know, organic, non-GMO. And it is. It's like a metal toothpaste tube. It's like, yeah. And so I used kind of a heavy hand with it because I like the flavor. And then I had a little bit left, and I just started laying out rails of tomato paste on my finger. Oh, it was so good.
Marvin, you're hopeless.
I am.
I am powerless.
I am powerless over toothpaste tube tomato paste, and my life has become unmanageable.
Well, acknowledging the problem is the first step to dealing with it. So, my suggestion: stock up.
Now it's always available, and it's so much better than the tomato paste in a can. It just so is.
Well, I remember my mother, when I was a child, she used to can her own tomato sauce.
Oh, Lord, yes.
And she was a big fan of Contadina.
Contadina is a good brand.
And she would put in her marinara, before she'd can it, she'd have all the fresh tomatoes boiling down. She'd put a slab of Contadina tomato paste in the sauce.
That'd be nice.
And then she would season it up the way she normally did, and she would then can it, and we would have the best marinara for a year. I mean, my mom was a big gardener. She loved planting tomatoes and corn and all kinds of green beans and stuff like that. And she would just can the living daylights out of all that stuff. I don't believe she ever bought, when she was at the height of her canning, she didn't buy the Jolly Green Giant or any of those kinds of things. That did not touch her table. But I remember as a child just going crazy for her tomato sauce. And the thing is, I miss all that. I do. I didn't get along with my mother very well, but I do miss things like that. Now to switch gears a little bit, I have survived the Trumpanzees descending on my beloved city.
That had to be gross.
Well, as I said, I was downtown last Thursday, and there were some of them that were in town early. And you could always tell them because they were old white guys looking around like they'd never seen a big building in their lives.
Might not have.
Well, I put these gentlemen to work. I'd been pushing myself around downtown all day, and I went across a two-lane piece of road, and I asked them to wheel me across the street because my arms were tired. And Christine said, "You didn't." I said, "Well, somebody had to put them to work."
Yeah. You job creator, you.
Well, I am. I am. And,
jobs.
And I say more of us in wheelchairs should get out there and make these maggots push us around for a while. When they like pushing people around, let's make it do some good. I don't know what Darlene would think about that. I don't think she'd trust the mind or personally. But I think we could do that. I had to give the crew the week off this week, since Orthodox Easter was Sunday. We are now officially done with our busy season. So I figured everybody could use a week off with pay. They crucified a record number of people this year, Robin.
Really?
Yes, more than you would find in a presidential election year, which I find amazing, which means business should be really good for the next couple of years. We are working on a recyclable version of the old number 7. But our testing lab is down due to an unfortunate fire. Evidently, somebody decided it'd be funny to use the shavings and press it into a new log. And, well, they decided to put some flint embedded in the structure, so that when you put the nail in, it would spark. And, of course, that led to an unfortunate lab fire. So it's not like we can help it, but our insurance says we're covered. So that's good. Ron DeSantis and his war against the mouse. Well, you know, I'm no huge fan of the mouse. However, my money's on Nikki, not on Ronnie. First off, the mouse is older, wealthier, and provides a lot more jobs in Florida than he does. So I think this is a tempest in a teapot. He's just positioning himself for the maggot.
Yeah, it's a temper tantrum in a teapot.
Well, I mean, his little temper tantrum might give him the governorship, but his congressional delegation, the Republican in the Florida congressional delegation, are splitting down the middle between him and Trump. I don't think he's got a prayer. I think he's the flash in the pan. He's Senator Hart all over again without the monkey business. Or maybe there is some monkey business. We just don't know it. I would like to get him in a candidate form and ask him how it was, how he felt getting help from real life, no nonsense Nazis to gain the governorship of Florida. And remember, he's only 42 years old. He could be hanging around like grim death for decades in the Republican Party. Who knows? He might become the perennial... he might become the perennial presidential candidate, you know, where by the end of it, he's got his own clown car and everything. So, I don't know. Now, anyway, I hope you all are doing well, and I would encourage anyone who can to donate to the Horn. Unfortunately, I'm not able to at the moment, but this is something that is important to a lot of people, and a lot of people you don't hear from so much. So if you can, please do help. And I'll talk to you later, Robin.
All right, Dave. I appreciate it so much. I'm glad you called in. I'm glad you put those maggots to work.
Well, yeah, and Chris, by the way, Christine told me she wanted me to send her love and tell you that she's proud of you.
Well, I'm far more proud of her, because she's doing something that's far from simple.
She's up for a challenge, you know, Chris.
Oh, sure, yeah.
This is not a lady who shrinks away.
We go and learn Braille not because it is easy, but because it is hard.
But because it is hard. Yeah,
I'm sorry, I couldn't resist. Shame on me. Shame on me.
I know. There are several Kennedys spinning in their graves as we speak.
Yeah, I got that story in the stack. Maybe that's next.
Oh. All right, I'll let you go so I can listen in.
Okay. See you, Dave. Have a good night.
All right. Bye.
Our buddy Dave in the blind. Hallelujah. I've got some thanks to send out. Thank you, Samson. Thank you. We are now down to 1655 to go in fundraising, so we're guaranteed not to be at $2,000 tomorrow for the fundraising hole. Thanks for lowering the rope a little further into the hole until the sheriff gets here. Thank you so much. Maybe you and Ralphs could have some company, and maybe let's see where. So Wednesday, Tuesday, maybe we could finish off last Wednesday's fundraising. That would be awesome. $155 would do that. Thank you so very much indeed. No, I told Dave that Bobby is in the stack. And he is. The guy who ate dinner off my plate on the live boat cruise. I didn't realize, I mean, it makes, yeah, he's 69 years old. And he went to Boston today, even though he's from L.A., to announce his presidential candidacy. You know, the presidential candidacy that he was talked into by none other than the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells, you know, Stevie Three Shirts. Recruited to be a chaos agent in the Democratic Party primary process. In Boston today, he said, my mission over the next, and I'm not going to do his fucked up voice because he can't help that. The other parts of his fucked upness he can help, but won't. My mission, besides it would hurt my throat. My mission over the next 18 months of this campaign and throughout my presidency will be to end the corrupt merger of state and corporate power that is threatening now to impose a new kind of corporate feudalism in our country, to commoditize our children, our purple mountains, majesty. There was a time when we believed he actually opposed mountaintop removal. Came down here, made a movie, had sex with a bunch of people. And then we never heard from him again. To poison our children and our people with chemicals and pharmaceutical drugs. Aha! To strip mine our assets. Ooh, he suddenly remembers us. To hollow out the middle class and keep us in a constant state of war. Now, it may take me a minute, but I've got some pretty detailed political philosophical analysis for the, and it's this. Oh, fuck you, Bobby. You anti-vax piece of garbage. There. Detailed political analysis concluded. No, not really. So now he and this is some great company to be in. New age navel gazer Marianne Williamson are the two announced opponents to Joe Biden in the Democratic primary for 2024. His own family has denounced him for being an anti-vaxxer. And of course, there's no way of knowing how many uninformed people actually listened to him, didn't get vaccinated, and then got all dead from COVID-19. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., for instance, has inveighed extensively against Dr. Fauci. And the vaccine. And he tried, and this was the most dirty, ugly, and cynical part of his anti-vax campaign. He tried to leverage the black community by comparing getting a vaccine for a global pandemic to the Tuskegee experiment. And we all know what that was. God. So, I hope people, and well, this is another example of why do I bother finishing this? I hope people are sharp enough to reject him out of hand. Kind of pisses me off because the CNN story from which I'm going here neglected to mention that he was, in fact, recruited by the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells. That seems like a salient part of the who, what, when, where, why, how, and how much that journalists are supposed to ask in any given story. Because recruited by Stevie Three Shirts, a Republican, former advisor to Donald J. Trump, and the J stands for, a guy who stands convicted and still isn't in jail for contempt of Congress. See, it seems like that might be a pretty important mention. But CNN did mention the fact that his own family members are calling him out and have excoriated him for being an anti-vaxxer. I don't know. Maybe he roasted it. Maybe he roasted his brain during his heroin days. I don't know. You realize that's where his environmentalism came from, right? He founded the Hudson River Keepers, if I recall the history correctly, and if I don't, I apologize. I would happily retract, but I think I'm right. He founded the Hudson River Keepers in part after being busted for heroin. It was community service. And for once, I hope there's no Kennedy mystique left. But it does give me pause for concern because of the fact that there is that Kennedy mystique. And because his uncle, Edward M. Kennedy, ran a rancorous primary campaign against Jimmy Carter in 1980. I'm old enough to remember it. I wasn't old enough to vote in the 1980 election, or Jimmy would have had one more vote. And that proved nasty enough to weaken Carter with everything else he has going on. Or had going on. It was enough to weaken Carter so that that, in conjunction with the Iranian hostage crisis and the multimillionaire for-profit media running around grunting about malaise, to make certain that we wound up with old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, on January the 20th, 1981. I mean, I remember when he headlined a protest rally in front of the DEP in Charleston. I emceed that thing. Addressing the issue of his family not being along for the ride on his little anti-vaxxing crusade, because that's all this political campaign is. Other members of my family who are not here today, I'm going to make a confession because I know most American families, they never have any differences with each other. So when that happens with a family, it's really huge news, like everywhere. It's not exactly what happened here. This isn't a little family disagreement over somebody getting snubbed at a birthday party. This is his members of his own family calling him out for the dangerous and toxically stupid rhetoric he spews that even got him banned from Instagram. Maybe Leon Scum will invite him onto Twitter to spew his anti-vax bullshit. Maybe. Girl can dream. So, yeah. And Dave just sent in an email. Bobby's daddy. Robert F. Kennedy Sr. saved the city of Indianapolis from burning the night Dr. King was assassinated. His son, however, wishes to assassinate the Republic in the name of saving it, and Stevie Three Shirts recruited him. I guess, like a good Stalinist, he's just deploying a useful idiot. That would seem to be the role that Bobby Jr. is playing now. Bye, Felicia. A little bit of news from January, a little today in January the 6th. Christopher Alberts, a Marylander, was arrested after January 6th, the night thereof, packing heat, having spent several hours on the grounds of the Capitol of the United States. At the time of his arrest, he was wearing a gas mask and some sort of, I guess, bulletproof vest. He was wearing a backpack. The backpack was full of MREs, meals ready to eat. He had some bungee cords with him. And so he was tried. And his trial concluded today. U.S. District Judge Christopher Cooper was the presiding judge. Remember, this guy went to the terrorist attack of January 6th on, having been weaponized by the likes of Sidney Powell and John Eastman and Donald Trump and that lot. Fox News. Onan. The prosecutors, to their credit, asked for him to be held in custody pending his sentencing on July the 19th, but Judge Christopher Cooper said, "Nah, I'm going to let him keep walking around. I'm going to leave him. Yeah, oh, for God's sakes." And according to the NBC News report I'm working from, Alberts was accompanied by his fiancée in the courtroom on Wednesday. Both appeared shocked when the verdict was read. Shocked, I tell you. There was an interesting side twist to this case, though. Defense lawyers called a witness in Cooper's behalf, or Albert's behalf, rather. It's a little confusing when you've got Christopher Alberts, the defendant, and Christopher Cooper, the judge. Now, in Albert's behalf, they called a guy named David Sumrall to the stand. David Sumrall has made a cottage industry out of claiming and lionizing the people, the terrorists, the domestic terrorists who attacked the Capitol on January 6th, claiming that they're political prisoners and that the domestic terrorist attack on the Capitol was a set up. So when Albert's pettifogger called Sumrall to the stand, the U.S. attorney trying the case, Assistant U.S. Attorney Jordan Koenig, upon cross-examination, began honing homing. Sorry, one of those pet peeves. Homing in on Summerall's predilection for defending the terrorists and started pressuring him to identify other maggots, other maggot terrorists who had in fact gone into the Capitol but had not been, have not been yet identified and charged. Eventually, Albert's pettifoggers realized they should probably object, and they did. His lawyer was Roger Roots. It entered an objection. Judge Cooper recessed the trial, and then they argued the merits of making Summerall sing. Roots, however, was pissed. You kind of wonder what kind of clientele Roger Roots has. Because he fulminated to the judge that the prosecution was trying to turn the witness into a, and this is a quote, cheese-eating rat and a snitch on the stand. And grunted that the prosecution was pretending they're the FBI. This is so outrageous, he said, lacking facts or law, and therefore pounding on the table. Assistant U.S. Attorney Koenig responded that Summerall's refusal to answer the questions was a direct reflection of his credibility as a witness. He said his ties to the January 6th community should be something that the jury knows. So Judge Cooper, hearing the arguments, said, nah, I'm not going to let you sit there and make him name names on the stand. This is a fairly unusual situation. But the witness can decline to answer. And the U.S. attorney said, oh, okay. Because the jury would still see that he had refused to identify other potential defendants. And that they could draw a conclusion therefrom about his credibility. See, Summerall, the witness, videoed all over the place on January the 6th. And so when they crossed him, the prosecution wore him out on his simping for the terrorists. And brought up claims that Summerall had made that 99% of the domestic terrorists from January 6th should never have been charged. And after Summerall was released from the stand, the defense rested. And apparently the jury didn't take too long, which surprised Christopher Alberts and his fiancée. Aw, love. Well, maybe they can have conjugal visits if he goes to prison. Because that's the next question. Let's see here. Judge Christopher Cooper. Oh, dear. Oh, no, not so bad, not so bad. I saw that he was born in Mobile, Alabama. I was like, oh, no. but he is a Yale graduate, Phi Beta Kappa, got his JD at Stanford Law, president of the Stanford Law Review, and was appointed to the bench by Barack Obama. So maybe Christopher Alberts will get what he richly deserves when it comes time for sentencing. Maybe. And speaking of judges, oh, by the way, a challenge just came in. An anonymous, kind internet friend of the program has said, here's a two-for-one, $100 post-tax time tripling challenge. All we got to do is raise $50. Just 10 people at 5, 5 people at 10, whatever. One at 50, two at 25. You know, y'all do the math better than I do. But if we can raise $50 in 39 minutes, our kind anonymous internet friend will kick in another 100, and that'll get us down from 1555. No. 1655. Yeah, no. We're at 1655. That'll get us down to 1505, which will mean that all that's unfunded is today, yesterday, Monday, Friday, and Thursday, and $5 of Wednesday. Well, okay, thank you. Thank you, Christopher. Christopher just jumped in by Venmo. And Venmo's perfectly helpful. It does help, Christopher. Thank you so much. So we are now down to, that's the first $5 of the 50. We got 45 to go. And hopefully we can get there. Because it's getting a little scary. And for those of you who might be curious, my the Venmo address is still at bob-kincaid-1. @bob-kincaid-1. So maybe you could be neighbors with Chris over there. That'd be great. Thank you, Christopher. Thank you so much. So that would get us down to 1505. If somebody just does $50, well, that will get us down to 1500 exactly, and we will be fully funded for last Wednesday. Thank you so much, both to our kind, anonymous internet friend, and to Christopher for being first on the challenge. Thank you. Now, I said, speaking of judges, do you remember? I'm thinking, how long ago was this case? It was in the last couple of years. A young girl found out she was pregnant. And because Florida is such a monumentally fucked up place, the teenage girl had to say, "Daddy, may I?" to some POS right-wing Republican judge, redundancy, in Florida. that trial court judge, hearing the case, denied the little girl her abortion because he said her grades weren't good enough. Is it beginning to ring a bell? She was 17 years old at the time, and the judge said he questioned her, quote, overall intelligence, emotional development, and stability. And the Intermediate Level Appeals Court in Florida overturned his decision and said that Jared Smith, Judge Jared Smith, abused his judicial discretion. Now, Governor Monkey Up appointed Smith to the circuit court in the first place in 2019. It gets worse. Upon the desire of the fascist governor, dictator of Florida, Monkey Up, well, back up. There's a little bit more to it. Jared Smith had to run for his seat on the Hillsborough County Circuit Court. And because of his odious ruling, the voters said, oh, hell no. And elected someone else. That's when Monkey Up appointed Smith, who had lost the election, to a brand new 6th District Court of Appeals this past December. And now, Monkey Up is considering Jared Smith for a seat alongside 14 other horrible judges. There's a nominating commission, which of course is another captive pet of Monkey Up. And they will interview him along with 14 other horrible judges next month. And this toxic, misogynistic sack of alligator dung may wind up on the state Supreme Court of Florida. Another person on that list is a dude bro by the name of John Stargell. He's a member of the appellate court as well. And he, and the decision that granted the abortion to the 17-year-old girl, you know, I wonder why a 17-year-old pregnant girl's grades would, like, go down. It's a mystery. But John Stargell was the one vote in the 2-1 decision that overturned Jared Smith's ruling. Oh, dear. Is there anybody who isn't cisgender, male, heterosexual, and Christian who's actually safe in Florida? I begin to doubt it. And, of course, we have a marginal trailer queen sighting. Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas is the object of absolute shit tons of hate from the right wing. because they need that they need an avatar for their bullshit grunting and braying and bleating about the crisis on the southern border. And at a committee meeting of the Homeland Security Committee, Marginal Trailer Queen, who unfortunately sits on that committee, out and out called the secretary.
Well, Congresswoman, let me assure you that we're not letting it go on. We are fighting this.
No, I reclaim my time. You're a liar. You are letting this go on, and the numbers prove it. You can't lie about the facts, Secretary Mayorkas. While you live in denial and sit over there with this attitude that you're doing everything right, you are killing Americans with your policies. And that is a fact. Your policies are killing people, over 300 Americans a day, over 300. And it's outrageous. Let me ask you another question. We talk about tyranny.
The ranking member is recognized.
You know, we can disagree.
This is Benny Thompson, Mississippi.
But just the fact that we have people watching, you don't have to call a witness a liar. There's a way that we ought to conduct ourselves. And what I'm hearing is not how a majority of this committee conducts business, and we can do better. So I asked that the words be taken down.
The chair asks the gentlelady if she wishes to seek unanimous consent to modify or withdraw her remarks.
I will not withdraw my remarks because the facts show the proof.
So in making a ruling...
Wait, the facts show the proof? What? Now, the chair, unfortunately, of Homeland Security is a maggot by the name of... Green. A green without a third E. Marge is a 3E green. But Mark Green, a Tennessee maggot, is the chair, and you can hear how uncomfortable he is at even having to do his job as poorly as he does. Would the gentle lady like to... Yeah, that's some leadership there, Mark.
On this, it's pretty clear that the rules state you can't impugn someone's character. Identifying or calling someone a liar is unacceptable in this committee. And I make the ruling that we strike those words.
Benny Thompson actually won, and her remarks were stricken. And then Marge had a meltdown. Republicans will never defeat Democrats, will never impeach Mayorkas, will never impeach Biden, and will never implement our conservative agenda if we can't even call a liar a liar. Republicans should not let Democrats strike down our words and do their bidding for them. Oh, Mark Green, I hope you have just a fun time having that horrible, horrible woman on your committee. This is, I don't know, maybe too much to hope, but maybe some of the maggots are beginning to figure out that her willingness to constantly say the quiet part out loud might not be that great for them. Mark Green is not exactly a Biden simp when it comes to the southern border. When he became chair of Homeland Security in the House, he said, for the sake of our national security and homeland security, ending the border crisis Biden created, oh my aching, is our top priority. At a time when illegal immigrants are flooding our border by the millions, no community in the U.S. will be unaffected. We must stop the flow of fentanyl that is killing... Most of the fentanyl is coming through shipping containers at the various ports. But that's lost on these maggots. We will hold President Joe Biden and Secretary Mayorkas accountable for their complete dereliction of duty and failing to respond to this crisis. And then there's the matter of, what's his name? Teixeira, the little traitor, the Air Force National Guard dude. Marge has been praising him as a hero, and even the maggots are pushing back on that, too. Little Marco, Miss Lindsay, some of the real crazies are even doing that. Is it possible that we've found their level of their inability to tolerate her horseshit? I'm being censored. We can't win if I can't impugn. That dumbass couldn't spell impugn if you spotted her the I, the M, the P, the U, and the G. Impug? What? Impug? Come on. Spin the wheel, Marge. Maybe you can get a concrete elephant statue or something. Gets exhausting. Darlene in Connecticut, thank you so much, dear. We are fully funded for last Wednesday. Our Kind Internet Friends Challenge has been met. And the 2-for-1 challenge is accomplished. So we're down to 1,500 to go. Thursday, Friday, Monday, Tuesday, and today. Thank you so much. Slowly working our way toward being able to pay a pretty damn big bill and maybe do some car repairs. Thank you, Darlene. Hey, Ralphs. Ralph says, maybe some of the shipping containers are on Elaine Chao's daddy's ships. Wouldn't surprise me. We had the clip from CNN earlier, Don Lemon and Poppy Harlow getting exasperated with Vivek Ramaswamy, especially Don Lemon, and righteously so. Well, the multimillionaire for-profit media simply cannot stop talking about yesterday's Fox News settlement of $787.5 million. So they had a little panel with Jake Tapper, and Allison Camerota was on the panel. Allison actually worked over there for Rupee and Lockheed for 16 years. And she's not happy with the settlement. This will work a lot better if the audio isn't muted. And Darlene, do I understand you right? Another $50 challenge, Darlene says. So 20 minutes to go in the program, and there's another $50 challenge on the table. That'll net another, so $50 will net $50, and we will be down to $1,400 for the fundraising goal through the end of the evening. Darlene, if I understand you right, that's what you meant? And if so, thank you. If not, I apologize. Thank you. So, can we do $50 in 20 minutes? I hope. Okay, now that the audio is not muted, let's try this again.
NDA, were you surprised about what Fox did?
I haven't been surprised by any of this, nor am I surprised by the settlement. I predicted there would be a settlement all along because Fox doesn't want to air its dirty laundry in a court case. And forgive me, I don't share quite Ellie's, being impressed at the outcome. This is half of what Dominion asked for, let's remember. And yes, obviously it's a big windfall for Dominion. It's chump change for Fox. They make more than $1 billion a year, their news division. And so this is a victory for Fox. They don't have to put their big stars on the stand, and they didn't even have to issue a public apology. When you guys say that they admitted that they lied, no, they didn't. They're saying that we
She's
acknowledge
right.
the court's findings that certain claims about Dominion appear about Dominion to be false. That doesn't say we lied. That says they're false, and they say certain claims. They're not even saying they made those claims. They're not even saying which hosts of theirs made their claims. I think that this is the best outcome that Fox could ever have hoped for once they got themselves into this mess.
Well, we were translating it from lawyerese to English, but I take your point, Allison.
They're not going to have to say anything on the air. They're
right.
not going to have to say on the air, we fudged the truth, we lied, we disseminated disinformation. They're not going to have to. I mean,
right.
at least with Gretchen's settlement, Gretchen had a public statement that said something to the effect of, we apologize and regret the fact that Gretchen was not treated with respect and dignity. I mean, she got that in her settlement, and Dominion didn't get that.
Right. Well, and I mean, they didn't apologize publicly for whatever they paid to the family of poor Seth Rich, who was murdered, and Fox put out a whole bunch of insane conspiracy theories about that. Sarah, do you agree with Allison here that this is the best possible outcome Fox could have gotten, even though it is this astoundingly huge check, embarrassing, truly, to any organization that considers itself journalistic or pretends to be journalistic, to have to pay $787,500,000 to avoid a defamation lawsuit? But do you agree? I saw Colby Hall from Mediaite wrote something about, like, look, at the end of the day, Fox avoided 6 weeks of hideous coverage.
Well, I do agree that reputationally this is good, Jake, but legally there are some problems. Fox faces a bunch of other defamation suits, most notably a $2.7 billion defamation suit from Smartmatic. And so when you concede, even if it's just in a legal context and you're not apologizing, that you did air falsehoods, that makes it a lot harder for you to litigate some of those future defamation cases, and there are a lot of them. Now, talking about the financial damages, yes, $787 million is just, you know, less than half of what Dominion was expecting, but if you were to compound that amount with these other cases coming up, I mean, this is going to add up to be pretty significant for Fox. Now, broadly speaking, I agree with Allison. This, you know, is a win in some senses because Fox is not having to face its viewers. It's not having to apologize. We were in a reporter scrum a few minutes ago with Dominion lawyers, and we were asking them, are you going to demand retractions from Fox? They didn't say anything along those lines. And
of course they didn't. They got $787.5 million. But I too have been thinking about this. And I can't completely overcome my, well, the things that live in my head. And there's this line that is variously attributed to either Bear Bryant, Woody Hayes, or Bo Schembechler. And it was probably none of them and somebody else entirely. And it's from the dim, misty past of college football. And it had to do with the fact that Michigan, Ohio State, and Alabama were not particularly known for throwing the ball a whole lot at one point in time. And one of those three coaches is perhaps apocryphally said to have remarked, Only three things can happen when you throw the ball, and two of them are bad. Well, this is what's going on with Dominion. Dominion could have gotten a verdict of liability and that aforementioned $1 damages award. $1. They could have lost outright. They could have won the trial and spent God only knows how much more money in an appeal that Fox would absolutely file. And so while I wish Fox had been publicly humiliated, I understand why Dominion didn't take the money, and I really hope the rest of us do too. And there's so much discovery out there that the $2.6 billion Smartmatic suit, well, the urge to settle that one may get strong with Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, too. And I get the feeling that some of the individuals in particular, maybe, you know, Sidney Powell, John Eastman, Rudy, I get the idea that maybe Dominion might actually, with $787.5 million in their pocket, might actually take those fuckers all the way to trial. And devil take the hindmost. So there's still a lot more going on here. And it seems kind of a disservice for none of the people on this panel to have mentioned that. And the other thing they mentioned when Allison was going off on Allison Camerota was going off, you know, this is just half of what they were asking for. Do they not realize that Dominion waived $600 million of its ad damnum claim? Because they did. So that 1.6 was reduced to basically a billion, and $787.5 million is over 75%. Of that billion. How does a competent lawyer, look at their client and go, oh no, we should definitely go to trial and make them apologize? That would rise to a level of legal malpractice. Maybe I mixed up, sorry, Randy Radar, maybe I mixed up my Dominions and my Foxes. Randy asking, why didn't Fox appeal all the way to the Supreme Court? Because they settled. And this is a state court case. So you would have to get through the state court case, through the state appeals courts, through the state Supreme Court, and then hope that the Supremes would grant cert. What's called certiorari, which is a grant of a petition of appeal. And Fox would have gladly spent that money, but that would have cost them probably more than the settlement did. This isn't about right and wrong. Despite all the floral language of the Dominion lawyers, this is about economics. This is money. Plain and pure and simple. I hope that helps. I hope that explains a little bit. Kind of the purpose here. Thank you, Brendan. Brendan has gotten us started on Darlene's challenge, which she confirmed, yes, that's what she meant. So we got $45 to go. No, not 45. I'm sorry, 35. $35 in 10 and a half minutes. If we can raise that, we'll be all the way down to $1,400. And that'll be such a help. that'll mean that we will only be $200 unfunded for last Thursday. Thank you, Brendan. Thank you so much. I don't have instant recall here, Randy Radar. I mean, I think I was talking about Dominion. I don't know. Okay, as we wrap up the program, again, it's nice when we can have a smile here and there. The co-founder of that noxious right-wing cesspit of hate and malevolence, the Daily Wire, the co-founder is Jeremy Boring. Thank you, Goddess of Irony. Said that Matt Dysphoria Beard Walsh had in fact had his Twitter account hacked, but also said that that was just the tip of the iceberg of the hack that was performed on him. This is Matt Walsh, the guy who refers to himself as a theocratic fascist, and has made a career out of saying things like he would rather be dead than have a child who was trans. And I'm sure this has nothing to do with blackmail. This has everything to do with trying to rightfully destroy Matt Walsh. Jeremy Boring put on Twitter, "You may be aware that Matt Walsh blog had his Twitter account hacked last night. What you may not know is that the attack went well beyond Twitter. The hackers have managed..." I love this. I love this so much. "The hackers have managed to gain access to, well, everything, including 20 years of Matt's emails." Boring went on to say, "What scandalous information will the hackers find in Matt's email? I do not know. I'm sure I said things in my 20s that I wouldn't feel great having aired publicly." Girl! He's saying things in his present day that 99.9% of decent human beings would never let cross their lips in real time now. And then said, "What will Daily Wire's response be to things 20-year-old Matt may have said?" And then the pogo sticking up onto the cross began. "At the exact moment Matt Walsh's blog was being hacked by criminals, Michael Knowles was being evacuated from Pitt, the University of Pittsburgh, because of a violent riot protesting his speech in which trans activists and sundry other leftists burned Michael in effigy and tussled with police." You know, when you're trying to stoke fear, you know, tussled. "That's just the last 48 hours, and that's in addition to all of the usual death threats, harassment, and corporate targeting that are our daily companions." Oh, honey, go soak in the bath. Or wait. Thank you, Matt. Just reminded me. Bitch, go brush your hair. And since we're over at the Daily Wire, this, I know, Randy Radar, I can't even buy that much email storage. Well, you don't have a $1 billion sugar daddy like the Daily Wire does. We talked a little bit the other night about Candio. And by the way, time's running out. We got 5.5 minutes to raise $35. Fingers crossed. But we were talking, you know, we had that clip from Candio the other day. God, she's so horrible. Um, Well, Candio's back in the news because that's where she lives. This time, she's not after trans girls or trans guys. No, this time she's after Lizzo. How can you not love Lizzo? She's brilliant. She's beautiful. She's got more talent in her toenail clippings than Candy O will ever have in her entire life if she lived to the great age of Methuselah. But that doesn't slow down Candy O. No. Candy O doesn't like Lizzo because Lizzo's popular and people like Lizzo and Lizzo's talented. If you and remember, we have determined here that Candy O is actually little Benny Drywife Shapiro in blackface drag. They look, they sound alike, they look similar, they talk alike, they hate alike. I don't know if anybody's ever seen them in the same room together. If you peep comments on any of Lizzo's fat acceptance photos, you will undoubtedly find a score of batshit insane women telling her that she looks beautiful. Men do not lie to other men in this way. Uh-oh, further proof that she's Ben Shapiro in blackface drag. They do not pretend that clinical obesity is beauty. It's never apparently occurred to Candy O that beauty resides in multiple forms. Wasn't it Candy O who had the fit over underwear for disabled people? Oh, but she wasn't done. Candy O wasn't. Hoping you get hacked soon, too. Only women could be emotionally manipulated into supporting their own eradication via support of trans men. Only women could be fooled into supporting a death cult of fat acceptance. Today's cultural battles prove that women are more irrational and emotional than men. Utterly oblivious to the irony of making that statement herself. Death cult of fat acceptance? I wonder how long it's been since Candy O has had a cheeseburger. Because toxic thinness is far more likely to be imposed upon women. And simply recognizing that women's bodies come in a multitude of shapes and sizes, well, I guess that's just a bridge too far for Candy O. Now, isn't it? Why do... I know the answer. Why do people have to be as vile and vulgar and hateful, ugly and nasty as Candy O and Ben Drywife Shapiro and Matt Dysphoria Beard Walsh? I don't know. Yes, I do. Hey, look, everybody, being prayer meeting Wednesday, it's the prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him. It's a good dollar. In the new United States of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, in the universe, forever under God, hate pays. Love goes begging. Hate pays. Yeah, maybe after the show, our buddy Kenneth is play the Cars Candy O. And then back to Matt Dysphoria Beard Walsh. A reporter named Del Cameron, a senior policy writer at the publication Wired, got permanently suspended from Twitter today. Wonder what Del Cameron did that was so horrible. Oh, wait. Del Cameron reported on Matt Dysphoria Beard Walsh having his entire life hacked. All he did was write about the hack. Twitter suspended him for distribution of hacked material. Del Cameron, however, did somewhat identify the hacker. The hacker goes by the name of Doomed. They only figured out the hack. This is delicious. Out-of-character tweets started appearing on Matt Walsh's Twitter account, like a tweet that was directed at little Ben Drywife Shapiro that said, "You know what you did. You're a closeted homosexual and hide behind being Jewish." Then there was another tweet from Matt Walsh's account calling Joe Rogan a pedophile. Another tweet that said, "I can confirm Andrew Tate kidnapped and raped those girls." He's even got Matt Walsh's W-2. The hacker said, "No ill will. The intent was to make funny tweets, as Matt Walsh likes to trigger people. We caused no financial harm, threatened anyone, nor ruined anything. It's just a few silly words on social media." Oh, come on, please. Please, 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 please find his Pornhub or ex-hamster password. Please show us all the tranny porn that Matt Walsh watches. Oh, please. Again, girl can dream. So that's the program. Hopefully, maybe the overnight crew or someone that the internet latency hasn't caught up with yet will finish off Darlene's challenge. And that'll get us down to 1,400. It'll be 1,700 tomorrow. But that's an entire day's worth of programming away from 2000. So thanks for all the help this evening, everybody. Thank you so much. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you this evening. God, I wish I was independently wealthy and could just do this, like, you know. But then again, I'm not a hate-filled, malevolent, misanthropic pustule like Matt Walsh or Candio or Ben Drywife Shapiro. Thank you. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our news ninjas. Hey, like and subscribe the podcast, please. Leave a comment. It means a lot. It really does. And thanks to those of you who are doing exactly that. Thank you. Mash the daylights out of that heart button over on TuneIn Radio, please. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. My colleague Bo is up in D.C. right now working the halls of Congress on the AIC Act like I was doing a couple of weeks ago. I hope he's having some luck. Please stay safe. Read up on those rules for boosters for people 65 and over and immunocompromised. Fuck Robert Kennedy Jr. and his anti-vax bullshit. Wear your mask when you're around Robert Kennedy Jr. or the anti-vaxxers or the maggots because they're a diseased lot. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry something with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance 15 to 20 feet like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And of course, if someone comes towards you hollering about, "We can't win if I can't impugn," avoid that gym rat like the plague, because she is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.